Hey, this is Tim Skiba, adventurer, serial entrepreneur, hypnotist, and author of Less Pain, More Gain, a guide to making changes in your life with some simple techniques. I know a thing or two about helping people shift to an abundant mindset. And if you want to learn more how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create a scalable sales system, you should be listening to The Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to The Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another guest episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. So my special guest today is Tim Skiba. So many, many things. He is an adventurer, serial entrepreneur in multiple service-based businesses. He's done a lot of stuff in sales in the past. He is a hypnotherapist, author of two books, one of which is called Less Pain, More Gain, which is a guide to making changes in your life with some simple techniques. Entrepreneurs, business people, wide range, seek him out to help when they're looking for an abundance of money, which is usually what people are starting with. And then the real fun begins when you dig under that in the health and relationships and business, private life, all of that. We are going to chat about mindsets, limitations, hopefully some things that come up that will help you in your sales career as a sales leader, business owner, maybe in your relationships, in your business life, your financial life. Who knows where this is going to go? I don't. And I'm super excited. Tim, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So I am looking forward to this because if there's one thing that is just fundamentally true, and most people know this, is that sales is a mental game. A lot of times people come to me and they say, what should I say for this? Or how do I close more deals? Or how do I overcome objections? Fundamentally, like when I was writing my book and going through that process, it was like, no, we got to deal with the deeper stuff, right? Like none of that matters. I can tell you exactly what to say, but if you don't believe it or you don't know how to do it, none of that matters. And so where do you want to start? Fear, mindset, where do we go?
The authenticity part and being authentic with your customer or client. And if you are not listening, that's where it all starts, with listening to your client, customer, and hearing what they're really saying. And as I work with people, the words they use tell me the truth. And they can say all kinds of things, but when their fears come out with their objections or they say something, and then that's focusing on and hearing and diving and drilling down why, what's important about that? That's a writer downer. What's important about having a blue car? What's important about having velour seats? So you know, you learn what their core motivation, what their core belief is, and why that's important to them at that moment.
But here's what happens in the real world. I mean, that sounds nice, Tim. That sounds great. You've been in sales. You told me you were in automotive sales. Like, you've done it. I've done it. Put that in a book. That's a writer downer. Great tip. But it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen universally in sales, even though universally, I think most people would agree that that's what it takes. And so what keeps people from two things, asking those questions, going at that level in the conversation, and then listening, the second piece.
What happens or what do you, why don't
they
do that?
What gets in people's way? Yeah. Why don't they do that? Salespeople.
They go to what they're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And it's same thing. And I'll go right to relationships. People then, and the love languages and how they work and communicate. And people, when you first date, you buy gifts, you spend a lot of time together, you hold hands, you tell them how wonderful they are, and you do everything when you start a relationship. But as relationships move forward and you start to get comfortable, we revert back to what's comfortable to us, to you personally. So if you are a numbers person into statistics and that's how you see things, then you're just going to focus on what you're comfortable with. And the person asking the questions is always in charge. So when you start to ask questions, you are in charge of the sales process. You're authentic because when you hear the answer and you're actually listening, you're not just saying, oh, so what kind of car do you want today? Maybe shouldn't be in cars or whatever, but what are you looking for today? And you go, oh, well, I want to sell this one, or you need this because we got 20 of them and we got to get rid of them. That's not really providing service to the customer and ultimately listening to what their desire is and their needs and benefits. That's when you shift. And if you're listening, you'll hear it. And then simply repeating what they just said to you, then you create rapport instantly because the language that they use is authentic to them. And when you use their language, you instantly create rapport because there's nothing closer to who we are than our language when we describe something or what we want.
Makes total sense. And the way I see it based on what you were saying is that when people don't ask those questions, like, why is that important to you? Why would you want this? Or how does this fit in for you? Right? It's about me, the salesperson, making it about you instead of myself. It's two things. One is that the default self-centered mode, I think that most people, if they're not careful, will get into, because at some level, we're a primal animal that's caring about our own survival. And so we just default to whatever's comfortable for us. And then the other side, like you said, is also interesting, is that motivation, which is I'm looking at myself, my default mode is myself. And then I also have my own motivations because I want to sell this car because I have a bigger commission, or I want to sell this package because it's going to give me more money. And I don't really care what you say. So I probably won't even ask you questions because I actually don't care what you say because I know what my agenda is.
And you know how that goes, that plays out. Because the people come in, they get them. And if you are a super salesperson and you are knocking it down and you have that persuasive way to get people to do things and you're an influencer, that can be really wonderful. But if it's not authentic, then they bring the car back in 2 days and go, no. And now you got a chargeback or whatever it is, or they get pulled in no matter what you're selling. And I'm using cars, but even something, anything, even online, the products that with the webinars and different things that have been out there, you got to act now, do this. There's all the language in there that drives you anxiety. And you go, if I don't do this, I'm going to lose out. And then they have buyer's remorse afterwards. And if it's not authentic, they really didn't need the product. It's not good for them. 24 hours, 36 hours later, they're sending it back. And that's not good for any salespeople.
No. So, and I think one of the challenging cycles that happens is newer and or more inexperienced people in sales around that kind of person that you were just describing, right? Which is the one that nobody likes buying from. And the more that people like you and I and everybody can shift salespeople, the better. But what happens is the people who aren't as successful are impressionable. They see that it works. On the surface, it works. In the moment, it works. They're ringing the bell or putting it up on the board or high fives, whatever. It looks good. What they don't see is behind the scenes 2 days later when some commissions getting taken away or the company is losing out long term. And I think that's where it kind of perpetuates. People say, well, that works. It must work. It worked for Bob over there. He's always putting it up on the board. So this is great.
So big numbers and being in business, it's who you are and being authentic to who you are with the person. They want to know you're authentic too. And they want to feel comfortable. And the biggest way to create rapport is mirroring their language and listening to what they're saying. So many salespeople have scripts and the companies spend tens of millions of dollars to educate their sales force, but a lot of them don't ever teach them to listen. Nope. And that's where they drop the ball. It's wonderful to have a script and a NLP language that is going deep and touching them in different ways and in their mind and lighting up all the sensory perceptions and getting them in the car, getting them in there. Here, how does this chair feel? And sitting furniture, whatever it is, they get in there, go, oh yeah, well, this is nice. But is this really fit them? And is it right for them? And a lot of people don't want confrontation. So they'll just ride all the way and they'll even sign the deal. And then they'll go back and cancel their check.
Yeah. I mean, some people do chargebacks. I've been in service-based telephone sales where salesperson just walks in the next morning to voicemails because the person is so non-confrontational. They didn't want to say no. They signed up. overnight they sent the email or left the voicemail wanting to cancel. And then when you try to call them to retain it, they still won't answer because they are not going to fall for that again.
Right. Exactly. We do everything we do because of the way we feel. And we know fear is a bigger motivator than pleasure or peace and joy. We want to talk about the wonderful things that happen in our life, but really the driving factor is if you have a beautiful party, sand, beach, and palm trees, and all that is there, and there's a tiger chasing you, you are not going to focus on the beach and the sand other than an escape route and getting away from the tiger. So that's the truth about fear, that it's the bigger motivator. So when people come to you as a client, finding out what those fears are, that's the most important thing. If you can diffuse their fear, it's golden. Now you connect it on a level where you can really help the person and fulfill their needs.
So let's stay on that topic because this is fascinating. Potential customer fears. They're currently a prospect. They're not a customer yet because of this fear barrier, and everyone's got a different one.
Just looking.
Just looking, not interested, send me more information, like all kinds of different things that come up. What guidance tips you would have for someone in sales to help a prospective customer overcome those fears? I guess the first part is identify what the fear is and then help them overcome it.
So, and the next question is what's important about that? What's important about that to you? If they want something, have a desire, so why is that important? Is it because of the money? Is it because of the status? Is it because how that it's going to make them feel in the future? And that is the most basic question. And listening, I keep going back to that. That is my go-to because that's how I do my business. That's how I work with people. And everybody is communicating. There's a lot of other things. There's body language and being aware of that and educating yourself on body language and knowing when somebody's closing off and they go, yeah, so, and they lean back. And when you're on your script, you're not aware and you're focused on your script. You're not watching your client or potential client. It's so basic. It's so simple. And we get caught up in our own desire and confusion comes in with the client and they go, well, what are you even talking about? All I want to know is, do you have any red ones? I don't care what the thickness of the paper is. I just need red paper. So it's not all the features and benefits all the time. People listening to them and getting what's important to them. So what's important about the red? Why do we have to have red? Orange wouldn't do. What's important to them? And even in colors, colors are so important. And being in sales, Jason, you know, colors make people feel differently. And that's why Home Depot is orange. Because there's a sense of value or less cost. Orange gives that. Blue gives you a sense of authority. It's like the navy and the blue. There's so much put into colors. There's a whole chart that shows different logos and how people respond to different colors. So it's listening to the people, also being educated yourself. And everybody listening to this is getting some more information to help them to be a better salesperson. And more authentic.
Well, I think the listening is key. I completely agree with you. I think it's one of those things that salespeople, when they're not tuned in and they're thinking too much, usually about what they're going to say next and what they're going to do next, they're too busy thinking. And this is not just salespeople. This is most people.
Most people.
In the world, in a conversation, they're listening to respond or waiting for the other person to shut up so they can respond with what they have to share versus listening to then think about it and then respond with something relative to what they said. But it's interesting how many times I've listened to a phone call or sat in a meeting externally, right? Not the active salesperson participant, but a coach or a mentor or manager, and heard things because I'm not thinking about anything but what they're saying. And all I'm doing is a sponge and hearing things afterwards, talking to the salesperson, say, did you notice this? Did you know? No, I didn't know. Like, how did you not? And for me, it was obvious, but I wasn't thinking about anything, just listening.
And let's just shift now, listening. And every single person has some sort of relationship with somebody. Mm-hmm. So if you had a way to immediately connect with your significant other, would that not be helpful?
Of course. I think everyone would say yes.
So this very same technique can be used to reconnect or get your significant other or even somebody you don't even know to fall in love with you all over again. And I've used it and taught it. And a friend of mine said he went home, used that technique, simply listening, mirroring their language of the last few words and saying what's important about that. Best night he had since he was married. He was like, I don't believe it, but I'm going to do it again. So it's just that language, people can't help. And even if they know you're doing it in trainings, we've done that and worked with people. And even knowing you can't help but have rapport and that person to have better rapport with you because their language is so important to them. And little scenario, the wife comes home. She says, oh, I had a terrible day. Susie did this. And you go, oh, you had a terrible day and Susie did what? That's all. And shut up. And salespeople, same thing. Just shut up and listen. You don't need to memorize the script because you're creating rapport instantly. And that's really the secret to all sales is listening to your potential customer and helping yourself along the way by creating another relationship with somebody that wants to help you succeed. Raving fans. Yeah. And if you connect with somebody on a level that is emotional to them and you're getting down to the core beliefs and their core values of why they're doing what they're doing, why is it important for you to invest this $100,000? Because this $100,000 invested in my company will change the experience for every new client in my company and every other person that works for me. What's that worth? $100,000 investment, millions on the back end. And you now have a relationship with somebody, you want to create raving fans. And when you sell authentically and you connect with them on what their values are, you don't have to believe in them. You just have to acknowledge what they are. You don't have to believe that red is the best color. It's not important. You just have to understand why red is the best color for them and what's important. Because my dad had a red car. And when he picked me up from school, I remember this very color red and how I felt when he showed up and I got to climb in that red car and drive away. It's all about the feelings and the sensations. And when you call up with that simple question of what's important about that to you? And they'll stop. People will stop. Silence. They lose their mind and they go, can't stand it. But every salesperson, every trainer will tell you the next one to speak loses. So you just be quiet and let them search because some people process at different speeds. Most salespeople are blah, 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 and they're on their role. They're on their mission.
And the only thing I have to add to that is there's going to be most of the time the prospective customer is going into the conversation. The wall is up. The fear is up. You ask that question. You mean it. It's authentic. You really want to crack the code so you know how to help them at the deepest level with your product or service. The first answer you're going to get is probably going to be pretty surface, pretty fake and phony, right? Like pretty fluffy, where why is red important to you? Because it is. I like red. And I see a lot of people, they listen to something like this. They take that advice, go, okay, I'm going to use that. They get, I like red. Okay, sounds good. Now the next part of my pitch is blah, blah. It's like, no, no, you didn't find out anything useful yet.
That's right.
And there's a game, right? With really what you want to do is keep asking, why is that important to you? Well, why is that important to you? Why is your dad's car important to you? Oh, because he picked you. Oh, and why was that important to you? Like if you can do that, I think they say like 5 to 7 times, you've hit gold. Every prospect's different. Some people will let you do that. Some right. people are just like, no, I just want red right now.
And if they just want it right now, so is there any reason why we can't do this deal right now? Because then you're also going right to any objections. Yeah. And then if any objection, the same question comes up, well, my wife's not here. So what's important about your wife being here right now? Is she going to pick the color? Do we need to get her on the phone? What's important about that? And the fear. And when the client, customer, potential sees you fumble and stumble and get fearful, they're going to just step back and go, well, I don't know. If you're afraid, yeah. I'm afraid. And they immediately link with your fear. So that's the part of the thing of, I got to make the sale. I got rent due. I got this. People within 8 feet of you, if you're, it doesn't even have to be 8 feet. You send out a signal and we're all connected and it changes. And as soon as your heart changes and you change that resonance, they go, whoa. So
yep.
Being in tune yep. with their heart is more important for you to focus on them. Put your stuff to the side.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. Yeah. And I always relate sales to relationships. I mean, you mentioned it earlier. I think everything in life is sales. So if you're doing a consultative sale where you want to help the other person, it's going to mirror what you would do in courtship and relationships. We've all had that friend. I know I've had that friend several times who is desperately single. And that desperate singleness is actually repelling people away because they pick up on that desperate self-centered singleness so much that it's just self-fulfilling. It's just a death loop. Right. And I see that with
in relationships with and that romantic part, a lot of that is people have they're in that desperate, but there's a reason they're there. A lot of times they filled their life with something and there is no room for that other person. They think there is, but they aren't ready for that yet. And that's the other they get in. They might have the gift of gab and they get all in there and then boom. And they go, where can I hang my coat? Go to the apartment. And there's no room. If you wanted somebody to move in here, there's not space for anything. And that's a whole nother story. But the rapport part, the relationship, I only bring that up because that's the other part of what I work with is relationships. And the language part, the things that people say that are key that they're questioning is I'll try to make it. I'll try to get over there. And I go, if somebody says they're trying to get over there this weekend, what does that really mean? I always say if some girl said, I try to make it to your party next week, that's pretty much I don't plan to see her.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it would be great, but I don't anticipate it. And she knows that. I know that. So listening to their language, listening to the underlying objections. And that's part, I guess, where the other thing that the language that they, when they say, oh, the big thing for me is victim language, that people say, I have to do this. There's only two things in this world we have to do. One is die and the other is pay taxes. And some people say, well, I don't have to pay taxes. Well, you can't buy gas without paying taxes. You can't spend any money, virtually any state, without paying some sort of tax. And die. Nobody gets out alive. So everything else is a choice. So when you hear that language, somebody, there's an underlying pressure and drilling down a little bit and say, why is there something that's bothering you about having to do this right now? Those are things that allow people to open up and you're using their language again. Mirroring their language is so key in rapport and you're authentic. If you're actually listening, that's part of why this works so well with relationships is that you're actually listening to your significant other. You're not just waiting for him or her to be quiet, shut up, so you can tell your story of your day.
Yep. What's interesting is as you're talking about this, I know that we're talking in this moment about the prospective customer and listening to them. And I think what's really important too, because I'm also looking at it from a salesperson internal and also a leadership management perspective over a team, right? And working with a team, is if you're in sales, be careful of your language that you're using in these things that Tim was just talking about, which is your manager says, hey, you're going to close more deals this week. Yeah, I'm going to try. Like, I have that up on the wall. Do or do not. There is no try, right? Like,
exactly.
From Yoda. That Yoda. You try to get across the room. Either you will or you won't, but there is no trying to get across the room. And so as a salesperson, where are you saying try? Where are you thinking or saying have to? One of the biggest complaints, you know this, Tim, I mean, you've been around salespeople forever, is the leads are bad, right? I have to call these leads, but these leads are no good. Right. I have to do this. And like that victim side and this blaming thing, I'm going to try to get some sales out of these leads, but they're no good. And where is that mindset and that limitation for salespeople and for managers, obviously listening like you would to a customer, but listening to your team and hearing their words and hearing where they're stuck.
I'm going to just share with you that very thing. I had a salesperson call me. They were following up on something that I canceled. And I asked some of these simple questions, where they are, and got to know them. And before the end of the conversation, they were calling me to get personal help for them to get over something that had been holding them back. Because I listen for the language in the salespeople. And when they're not, it's not authentic, or they have their own fears, or they use, I'm trying to get this next sale, or I have to do this. Have to is that it's a victim mindset that if you have to do it, your heart's not in it. You're just not in it. And customers know it. They know it in their heart. When you go, you have to do this. They don't have to do it. And that pressure, it just messes up the whole system and you get off track. And then now you're back to your script and not listening to the client. It's just a part of my everyday walk now. And when you start to listen to the people in your life and around you and practice it with everybody you see, you create raving fans with your family and friends and people that go, you got to meet Mike. You got to meet Jason. He just connects on such a level. I don't know how to describe it. And then sales, they just multiply and come to you. And it just happens magically.
Then with that advice, because I also like to give people the ammo for the other side, right? So one thing is to say, stop saying try. Stop saying have to. Stop saying can't. These things are limiting. These things get in your way of what you say you want. What would be better for people to do or to say or reframe and make that shift when they catch themselves? What's a different
the try option? Word?
Yeah.
My wife and I spent a week trying to figure out what do you use instead of try. And we came up with strive. It's the same sound. If I'm striving to do something, how does that feel compared to trying to do something? Mm-hmm. And when you say, I'm striving to reach all my goals instead of I'll try to reach all my goals. We do what we do because of the way it makes us feel. And when you change the language and you no longer have, you take these words out of your vocabulary, even though it sounds longer or whatever, I'm doing everything in my power to achieve my goals. I'm striving to reach my goals. I'm going to do it. That's assumptive. I'm just going to do it. I was in a summit last week and I felt a little uncomfortable and I could have opted out, but I was like, I'm sticking it out. I'm just going to hang for the next couple hours and stick it out. And the next day was like golden because of the fact that I stuck it out and finally understood what was the dynamics and what was going on. Just do it. And there is no try, just like Yoda. And I use that all the time, but that's being authentic to yourself. Be honest with yourself. That's what the deal is. I'm making the choice. And that's have to. There is no have to. Making the choice, confidently saying, I'm choosing to do this. Even in a relationship at work, you may hate your job, but choose to go to work and do your best for the next 90 days. You choose. I'm making a choice. And people say, well, I have to go to work because I got to make money. Yes, you do. Yes, in a certain way, you want to make money. There's income. But is it much better to say, I made a choice to go to work? Even if they treat me like whatever they treat me, I'm going to go in and be happy. I have people that relationship and they go, what's wrong with you? After they shift their focus from being the victim to being in charge of their life. Had one mother of a client said, what's wrong? Are you smoking weed or something? said that to the client. It's like, asked the daughter of the client and said, is she smoking weed? It comes full circle. Nothing gets by, you know, in family. And then it's like, is she taking drugs? Is she on medication? No, it just shifted. It quit fighting with the mother and just went, okay, if that's the way you feel, it's okay. And a lot of people live in that drama state. And when you take that off the table, they don't know where to go. They're lost.
That's hilarious. I'm just picturing this mom thinking the child was on drugs, maybe joining a drum circle. And that's where this weird passive non-fighting thing came. And again, thinking about salespeople, thinking about managers leading salespeople and whatever that looks like, just thinking about for those salespeople who are struggling or feeling a struggle, whether it's accurate or not, is reframing that in your mind. And then as leaders, helping people reframe that and doing things that you want to. I've always said that life is way too short to do shit that you hate. Like if you truly dislike it, then stop doing it. Like you said, there's two things that are a guarantee, right? Outside of that, everything else is a choice. If you hate your job, if you hate Sunday night because of Monday morning, you're doing it wrong. Like you have a choice most of the time. Doesn't mean you can quit tomorrow. That might be irresponsible, but you can take steps to reframe and find another option in your life.
Looking for the joy, looking for your blessings, looking for what the attitude of gratitude. It's in my book and it's one chapter about just finding what's good about this. And my conversation with people is, tell me something good about today. And they go, what? They're not in that. But after a short period of time, everybody I ask that I come in contact with, when they see me, they go, I got to think of something good. What is going on good? And they say, well, I'm here. And you go, yep, beats the alternative, doesn't it? You're here working, you're making your income, you're doing whatever, you're washing your car. You're not 6 feet under, you're here. So if that's where they're at, you meet them where they are. And that's the other thing in sales, is meeting people where they are, and in relationships, is just having the compassion to meet them where they are. And when you ask these questions, you're meeting them where they are, because their motivation, even if they're in a state of fear, even if they're scared, they're buying this house for the first time, or they're doing this mortgage, they're signing this, their name on a dotted line for $250,000, first time buyers, they've never been there. So what's important about this? I'm the first person in my family that was able to buy a house in this neighborhood. Now I have room for my parents to come visit. Now I have room for this, or I have that. You don't know the motivation unless you ask. And those simple questions allow people to tell their story. And people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Old Zig Ziglar. So
that's it.
It's all the same stuff. No matter who you listen to, they cover the same things. It is about rapport and connection with people and helping other people to achieve what's important to them. And if you walk through your life every day making the people around you feel better about themselves, you can't help but have blessings come back to you. And that's my daily walk. I don't look to people. You got road rage and all those things that happen. And I go, he could have just broke up with his girlfriend, or he could have done anything. And they don't even know you. And you're upset because they cut you off on the freeway. And you go, oh, and that ruins your whole day. Does it really matter? No. Have compassion for the other people and good things come back to you.
This whole train of focus for salespeople with their prospective customers. Why is that important to you? What is important about that? Actually listening, diving deep, finding out that motivation, like the house example, right? So really the goal is to find out what is more important to them than their fears, right? Like a lot of salespeople don't know the answer to that. So they're just blindly hoping that the customer knows why it's important more than their fears. Most of the time they don't win that battle, and the customer's fears win, because nobody knows why it's actually important, like verbally, that part. And that's important. And looking at the salesperson, and this is what I put in my latest book that came out, was about motivating teams, is also as a salesperson or anybody understanding what's important to you in your career that you're doing, why you want to succeed, what it means to you, so that that is bigger than your fears, right? I mean, salespeople don't like to make calls, don't like rejection, are afraid of doing things that might make them look bad or fail. And it's about, what is your motivation? What's on your vision board? What's bigger to you than your fears and worth going after?
And clearing that out, some people say you want to figure it out. You shouldn't figure things out. But my deal is let's take the emotional charge off of it. Because if you're not afraid, if it happened and it doesn't trigger you anymore, then that's great. We come up with all kinds of systems to combat the fears. Somebody says, well, I get near the window and I just put this and I put my hand here and I put my left hand in my pocket and I do this and then I scratch my head over here and then I'm not nearly as afraid as I was standing near the edge of the railing. Well, that's a lot of work. But why are you afraid of standing near the edge? Were you pushed out of a tree at a young age? You don't trust people, whatever. And it's usually something simple. And I'm not saying you give the memory away or you eliminate it. You just shift the emotional charge out of it. And then not saying that you're going to be walking the high wire or anything, but you can at least live your life without all this other energy being spent on combating fears.
Makes total sense, because obviously we all have something, right? No matter what, there's something that happened in the past that's directing where we are, right? All of us. Like you said, and like we talked about, I mean, it's that survival part. It's about that tiger on the beach and seeing that tiger and our brain keeping us alive as a species. And it's actually better to imagine or be faked out by seeing 5 fake tigers hidden behind trees than not seeing them at all and getting killed. And so our brain really wants to see, make everything into a tiger to keep us safe, right?
Yeah. So many people, and that you say the calls and the knows, and I can't remember who did it or said it, but in auto sales, it's like there's 9 no's to every sale. So you get 9 people that say no. And every no, when you shift your thought pattern about that and you're anticipating the no, and you go, yeah, when I get that, I know I'm closer to my goal. It's a total emotional shift. Not that the no is what you're really focusing on, but when you hear it, it's not like, good, okay. So is there anything else? If this isn't the one for you, what is? And it's okay if you don't buy today, because I know before the day's out, I'm going to hit my quota and I'm going to make my sale. I'm just here to service you right now and spend the time with you, because I'm here till 7 o'clock at night, or I'm whatever the time is, right. You know, I'm here. And even those, the numbers and knowing your statistics, knowing what they should be, and you work within that. And if you're on phone sales and you're supposed to close 3 out of 10 or 6 out of 10, whatever that is, that no is a star on your screen that goes 3 more to go and I got a sale kind of deal. It's shifting the mindset instead of getting that sinking feeling, that fearful, oh my gosh, another no. And the numbers don't always jive, but in general, when you shift the way you feel about it, that's when the person on the other line, there are studies about all of this that when you smile, they hear the smile. Even if you don't have a screen, they hear it, they feel it. There have been sales studies and over phone and all this and tested. If your heart's not in it, they can feel it. If you're not meeting your quota, you're not meeting your sales expectations, you're not getting, there's something that you have internally that's holding you back. Get that out, pull it out, take it off, clean the slate. It's right. Yes, we need this. Keep what you need. Take the rest of it, crumple it up, throw it behind you. Because things that go behind you, they're not gone forever, like your taxes from 5 years ago. They're on the shelf somewhere. And if you really need them, you'll go get them. But who goes looking for them? I don't.
Nope.
So that's one technique right there. If you touch it, you feel it, pull it out, take it, change it, get rid of it if it's bad. Keep the good stuff and let the rest go.
I love it. Let's shift gears just a little bit in the conversation here. You mentioned the word many times. Obviously, you and I are in alignment on many things. What does authenticity mean to you?
Authenticity means the real. You're not an actor. You're not playing a part. You're actually who you are. It's not a mask. It's the real deal. And that's what people, I think, they want to know. They want to know the real deal. If you're having a tough day, you're having a tough day. People want that, they know they had a tough day. And when you share those things, you become vulnerable. And when you become vulnerable, then that's when the rapport builds even more.
All right. What about persuasion? What does that mean to you? Or how do you define that?
I get funny feeling with persuasion.
All right, let's explore.
Persuasion, that is like almost a push or a pull. Influence is a softer word. I think that you can influence people in their best interest. Persuading them is a little stronger, and I pull back from some of that. Being authentic with your conviction for the need is much better than trying to persuade somebody. Persuading people, that's when you get the kickback, I would think. I mean, that's my feel.
All right, we'll go with that. What does success mean to you? What is your definition of success?
I have something that I say about that everybody is successful.
Okay.
Everybody is 100% successful in getting what they truly believe. So if you're not getting what you think you should be getting, then there's something wrong, some kind of underlying belief system that is holding you back. And there's two types of beliefs, the ones we know about and the ones that we don't know about. The statement that grandmother made or Uncle John made, something way back when, that was embedded in your belief system, or some teacher said, you're never going to be able to do this, or you're never going to lose the weight, or you're always going to look like Uncle Johnny, or whatever. Those things that we don't think about them, but they're deep down in the core of your belief system. So my personal is when I'm growing and I'm helping other people, I grow financially, spiritually, emotionally, and I have the ability to help other people, and I have the freedom to do all of it.
I love that. It's interesting because you're the second person this week who, when I asked that question, said that growth was the indicator. Like, that's what success means, is just growing, right? Not specific, but just growth in general. And a day with some growth or a period with some growth is success, right?
It's really more. And the whole life experience, everything is just an experience.
Yeah.
There really are no good or bad experiences. Some people say there are, but if you learn from something, mistakes and challenges, you learn so much more when you didn't achieve that goal than you would have if there was. And I was with an engineer from MIT today, and he said a test that everything goes perfect was a waste of time.
Yep.
Because you didn't learn anything. If everything's working right, you didn't even need the test to start with. There is no good. There is no bad. It's just experience. And that's part of the way of shifting your belief in those core emotional things that happen that go, oh, this terrible thing happened. And the language, and you hear people use that. And all it was somebody didn't get their mail today. It was so terrible. I was waiting for that. And they raise their emotional level to a height that is just, you go, mail, or they ran out of ice cream at McDonald's. Come on, it's not that terrible.
So in terms of success, where do you see the journey or the destination kind of like conversation fitting into your definition of success?
How do I see the journey?
Right. Like, well, there's the, is it the journey or the destination, right?
There's the destination. The destination, you may as well just, I got my first Corvette when I was 19 years old. I bought my first motorcycle myself when I was 13. It isn't the destination. It's all about getting there in the journey. It is not the destination. And I've had it, done it, like you said, had the toys, made the trips. I sailed a boat from Puerto Rico to Florida, a 39-foot catamaran, and we had 15-foot seas, and we had water spouts, and we had everything you could imagine except snow and fog, and it's all about the journey. And getting there is anticlimactic. To Florida, and it was middle of the night, dark, put your anchor down, you're here, but it was all about the experience, and that's what life is. It's a journey of stories. I had a guy talk about stories, man that flew across the English Channel in World War II, and he would come into my automotive shop, and he says, you guys might just think I'm an old guy. He said, but I lived. I flew over the English Channel, bombed Germany, came back, and we would go to town, and we would party all night long, and the next day, do it again. And he said, I'm here to tell about it. And I experienced life and I did things that so many other people never had a chance to, and well, and guys that did it and never came back. So It's all about the stories. There's a song that's out right now, 100 Bad Days. Yep. And I'm all over that. And first time I heard it, I went, this is golden. The thought.
Me too.
That is just the shift. That is what, when you can take the garbage in your life and turn it into gold, that's alchemy. That is what they talk about in all the thing, in all the history, is turning garbage into gold. And when you take your stories and no matter how bad it was, you shift it and change it to be your rocket fuel, to be your motivation, to be your tiger in your tank, to get you over, to move you forward, to be happy every single day of your life. That's really the success, is when you get up every day and smile and do the things you love to do. And this is what I love to do, help people every day. And a friend of mine says, if you could get up out of bed, open the door, go to the next room and do it, this is it right here. Changing people's lives. And that's what happens. It's instant. It's lifetime changing experiences that just people shift for the rest of their life, and they get the gold forever.
That's awesome. I love it. And the song that you mentioned, if anyone's not familiar with it, look it up. It's a great song. The chorus is 100 bad days make for 100 great stories or something like that, where it's essentially like the bad things. If you think about it and you're at a party or at an event or talking to someone, the bad, crazy stuff that happens make for the good story. Like your trip from Puerto Rico to Florida. If that cruise was easy and simple, that's a terrible, boring story that no one wants to listen to, right? But the challenges on the journey make it there. Tim, thanks for coming on the show, for being here, for sharing all the stuff, hopefully helping somebody out there shift their mindset, the fears, the conversation, so much stuff. If you listen to this, make sure to listen again, take lots of notes, some of the stuff that you said. They can find you at mindmechanicmethod.com. So that's your main website. They can go there. Also, the books that we talked about, so they can find them both on Amazon. So you've got your Less Pain, More Gain and Inspirational Healing by Design. And then if they want to schedule a time, if you're watching this, it's on the screen. Otherwise, tell them about that and that link. And then also you said that you had something special for everybody.
I have an online 5-day challenge that if you're here listening or you get the information from here, just put in the coupon code of CAPSFREE2020, zero money down, zero money period. It's free. Take it. There's three products. One is for money mind shift. If you have any health challenges, health mind shift, or relationships, all three of them, just for being here, supporting Jason. I'm just here to help. Go through that. Anything is helpful, or you need help in the future, seek me out and we'll go from there.
I love it. And for that access, so if you're interested in that, go to mindmechanicmethod.com. Not a paid product placement. I can attest to the great stuff that Tim does because he and I are working on some stuff together and it's amazing. So go to that site, free2020, all in caps. I'm not going to go into full sales mode. It's like normally it's X dollars and now you can get it for zero. Just go there. If it resonates with you, check it out, because he is doing this for free as a special benefit and favor for me and for the listeners. So Tim, thanks for joining me. Thanks for coming. Thanks for going through this fun adventure on the show. I appreciate you. Yep. And
it was a pleasure.
And what we talked
pleasure
about.
Pleasure to me.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.